Good morning and welcome to Focus on Health, the weekly radio program where we talk about all the great things happening at Van Deest Medical Center. I know it doesn't sound like me, but I am your host, Lori Foster, and joining us for today's program, we have nurse practitioner Jade Williams, who's going to be talking about women in menopause and postmenopause and how they can protect their heart and cardiovascular system. Before we get started into this great program, I do have a couple of announcements I'd like to share. Tomorrow is the Webster City Community Blood Drive. It will take place from 12:30 to 5:30 in the clinic boardroom at Van Deest Medical Center. The easiest way to make an appointment is to go online to lifeservebloodcenter.org. Appointments aren't required, but they are encouraged. Donors will receive a free cookie from Scooters here in Webster City and a coupon for 20% off to the gift shop at Van Deest Medical Center. And when you shop, they give, so we certainly appreciate the support for our gift shop. Again, the Community Blood Drive is tomorrow, April 9th, from 12:30 to 5:30. And tomorrow is a big day. Tomorrow we also have the start of Better Choices, Better Health. This is Iowa's Chronic Disease Self-Management Program, and we're going to be offering it in Ellsworth this spring. It is a free, interactive, 6-week workshop, which will meet each Thursday beginning tomorrow through May 14th from 9:30 in the morning until 12 o'clock noon at Trinity Lutheran Church in Ellsworth. Each session is led by 2 certified instructors. The workshop is designed to help participants gain confidence and take charge of their health. The program will cover practical tools to manage ongoing health conditions while staying active. Some of the topics that will be discussed include communicating effectively with family, friends, and health professionals, techniques to address isolation, frustration, fatigue, and pain, tips for healthy eating and safe physical activity, and how to evaluate treatment options and create realistic action plans. Healthy snacks will be provided at each session. If you are interested in joining the workshop, I encourage you to contact Ashley Bubeck. She is one of our health coaches in the Webster City Clinic. Her phone number is 515-832-7885, or you can email Ashley at abubeck@vandeestmc.org. And I did have a chance to talk to Ashley before today's program. If you're interested in maybe just seeing if this is something for you, she encourages you just come. Come to the first workshop and see if it's something that you would like to be a part of. Again, they will start meeting tomorrow. Begins at 9:30 at Trinity Lutheran Church in Ellsworth. And then lastly, great opportunity here. Time is running out to get applications submitted, but I do want to mention the Van Deest Medical Center Auxiliary is offering 6 scholarships of $1,000 each to 2026 high school graduates wishing to pursue a career in healthcare. Individuals going back to further their education in the healthcare field will also be considered. Applicants must be a resident of Hamilton County or a graduate of one of the high schools within Hamilton County, currently working or have a parent working at Van Deest Medical Center at the time of the award. The application forms can be found online. You can go to our website at vandeestmc.org. You can print the application, and you want to make sure that you get it sent by April 15th. That is the deadline for the application form, tax day, April 15th. It is a terrific opportunity, so we certainly hope we have plenty of individuals that do apply for the scholarships. And with that, we're ready to start into our program. As I mentioned, very excited. We have a great program for today. We have nurse practitioner Jade Williams joining us to talk about how women in particular can protect their heart and cardiovascular system when they are in menopause or postmenopause. So, like to welcome and thank Jade for joining us. Good morning to you, Jade.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here on the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me again.
Of course, we love to have you, and you bring wonderful topics each time you come.
Thanks. So April is really a month with many days of awareness and ones to be celebrated. And some of those include things like National Walking Day or National Public Health Week, which I believe we're currently in, and then Earth Day, and it's actually Move More Month. So with all this health awareness, I just wanted to share some science-backed guidance with our listeners regarding women in menopause and postmenopause and how they can protect their heart and cardiovascular system. So menopause is really a time when heart disease risk increases, and this is largely due to hormonal changes that affect our cholesterol, blood pressure, and unfortunately body fat distribution, as well as our metabolism. So why does this, you know, tend to cause a increased cardiovascular risk after menopause? It really has to do with those estrogen levels. They tend to decline and the body loses its protective mechanism for that lipid management. So really we're talking about the LDL or the bad cholesterol. And this tends to rise. Estrogen loss changes how that cholesterol will move throughout our body and increases the likelihood of small, dense LDL particles to stick inside those artery walls. And then the HDL, or the good cholesterol, can also decrease as well. And then we see this increase typically in abdominal fat, unfortunately, which is usually more so an increase in that visceral fat or the fat that we tend to think that sits around our organs. And then these changes, unfortunately, are linked to an increase in that cardiovascular disease risk. So really just touching base on what would an optimal cholesterol panel look like for adults. So that LDL or bad cholesterol, we typically want to see that number below 100. For those with a high risk or existing cardiovascular disease, less than 70 is often recommended. And then that total cholesterol, we would like to see it around 150. Generally below 200, however, is considered to be desirable. And then in regards to the HDL or the good cholesterol, 60 or higher is ideal. However, kind of like a minimum marker of acceptance would be 40 for men and 50 for women. And then those triglycerides, we're trying to get those less than 150. So the number one most important thing we can do for our health is get those regular health screenings. And that's really just coming in preferably on a yearly basis, if not needed more frequently, and having routine checks so that we can help catch those risk factors early. I generally recommend to my patients to come in and have their blood pressure, lipid panel, glucose levels, or also known as your blood sugar. And at that time, we can also track your BMI. And then this provides us with basically an ability to trend those markers and see what we can do to help modify or improve those numbers if needed. So hormone changes during menopause shift how your body is going to store that fat and handle sugar. And so many women develop insulin resistance that can unfortunately lead to stubborn weight gain and a higher diabetes and, of course, that cardiovascular risk as well. And so, like I said, these screenings can help track those changes over time and hopefully allow them for time for appropriate intervention. And then, you know, really one of the things that we can own as we transition into this period in our life is not forgetting to exercise, because moving your body does matter. So physical activity helps with our blood pressure control, improving that HDL or that good cholesterol, and then, of course, reducing that visceral fat. As that number increases, it doesn't necessarily correlate, however, with an increase in the scale weight. And so that tends to be one of the more difficult things. But we do tend to see as the female body transitions, we tend to notice that we may have changes in the actual shape and size mm-hmm. of our abdomen. And that's one of those indicators that visceral fat could definitely be becoming an issue with us. And so there was actually a study that was published back in 2015 in JAMA Oncology that I found to be very interesting, because we're now 11 years past when this was published. But in that study, they recommended, after completing a randomized clinical trial over the course of 12 months, and they had a considerable sample size of 400 postmenopausal women, that really 300 minutes of moderate activity or aerobic activity is much superior to the standard recommendation of 150, which is what we're still encouraged at this time. But those changes, I think, will hopefully be coming out, and that would definitely be something after finding this information I would be recommending to my patients, is that we try and target for that 300 minutes a week of aerobic activity. And then in addition to that 300 minutes of physical activity, if you can, you know, also incorporate that strength training 2 to 4 times a week, which is going to help with your metabolism, bone health, as well as that fat distribution, or really what we hear being known as like body recomposition. So, and another great outcome from the JAMA Oncology study was also that with that increase in the 300 minutes of aerobic activity, they also found that there was an increase in the reduction of the total fat, which actually helped lower the potential risk of breast cancer development. And so this is also huge, especially for all women. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important. You know, unfortunately, fat is it's very active in general, which we don't really ever or have ever really thought about it being like that. But visceral fat itself is very metabolically active. And so whatever we can do to kind of help try to minimize that or reduce the, you know, potential risk of not only improving our cardiovascular mm-hmm. health, but whatever we can do to reduce our risk for, you know, breast cancer is also something to definitely consider for our overall health and well-being.
So many benefits there. And I know we have heard for years kind of that 30 minutes a day for 5 days, you know, is we do encourage that. And what we want women to hear is that, you know, when you're out there and moving, whether you're taking a walk or going on a bike ride, whatever it might be, you know, just because you're at that 30-minute mark, you're probably just starting to feel good. Just push a little bit further. Just continue and extend that because the benefits are many.
Yes. So even if you chunked it out over 7 days, it averages about 42 minutes, give or take. So you can even, it doesn't have to be a consistent 42 minutes mm-hmm. every day, because you don't always have that available in your schedule. But maybe one day it's, you know, a 10 minute, and then the next day maybe it's 30, or, you know, however it works in your routine or your schedule. But really not focusing so much on how far you're going, that distance, just focus on the amount of time that you're committing to it. There's also so many other benefits to the activity itself. Your cognitive sharpness will also improve, which is something, you know, I'm not 100% sure how we tend to think about that. But, you know, if you get up and move before your work day, it should only improve your mental clarity and also your cognitive sharpness, and hopefully will set you up then for more success throughout the day. And also some of people, myself included, if you do exercise, it doesn't necessarily mean that you want to be doing it or that we're fully enjoying it every mm-hmm. day that we're doing it, but it's a commitment you're making to yourself. And then also you're actually growing a part of your brain every time you make the choice to do something that you don't really want to do. So if you're fighting against that little part of your brain that's like, oh, you know, your bed's warm mm-hmm. or you can push it off till, you know, 5 tonight later. But if you kind of push back against that, then you are growing a certain portion of your brain every time you do something hard. So anytime you push back, you're causing your brain to grow as well, which mm-hmm. is always great, especially as we age. And for sure when you're going into that menopause and postmenopausal state, because anything we can do to also prevent Alzheimer's disease or dementia is going to provide benefit as well, which we could probably do a multiple series on this, actually, how menopause and the different things. You know, since today we're just focusing primarily on cardiovascular disease reduction, but there's also, you know, the risk of development of dementia or Alzheimer's related cognitive issues as we traverse down into that menopause and postmenopausal mm-hmm. state. And then, you know, other metabolic diseases as well. So, yeah.
I like it. We'll come back. We'll bring those as program topics. Yes.
Yeah, so just considering healthy eating for heart protection, thinking about how that diet can play a major role in your cardiovascular health at any age, especially after menopause. So evidence definitely suggests that fruits and vegetables, eating those whole grains, lean proteins, and fish for those omega-3 fatty acids, limiting that saturated fat and added sugars, as well as your sodium. And then really just encouraging you to consume 20 to 25 grams of fiber a day. So, you know, lately with a lot of my patients, I've been saying focus on your protein and focus on your fiber. I don't really hit on a number necessarily in regards to like, well, how many carbohydrates should you be having or things like that. But it's really like if you can hit a target of 20 to 25 grams of fiber, average it out at minimum to 21 a day, as a female specifically, you'll see a benefit. And then also you're going to be hitting good whole foods typically, which is really what the whole goal is, right? Mm-hmm. And so eating, you know, that fiber, why is that so important, especially for women in menopause and postmenopause, is because it will bind to the estrogen and helps you excrete it. So that, I know, that might seem counterproductive as we're talking about that the estrogen levels are dropping mm-hmm. as we're going through, but the goal is to try and keep you on a nice steady state of whatever your body has available and not have this roller coaster effect, because that's where you start to see more so of those symptoms that we tend to associate with that journey, the menopause and postmenopause, as well as even perimenopause. So if you can target with a goal of 21 grams a day, then you tend to kind of allow yourself to have this nice steady state of estrogen, and you won't have so much of those estrogen dominant symptoms that we tend to see with patients.
So if we're talking about foods that are rich in fiber,
yeah.
So fruits and vegetables, some of the beans.
Yeah, so usually berries is like mm-hmm. a go-to. Blueberries, raspberries, they're going to be low in sugar, but they're also high in fiber, and you can eat a large volume of those and feel good about that choice that you're making. You know, it's much different eating a cup of blueberries versus eating, you know, 4 cookies. Mm-hmm. The benefits are gonna, you might get a nice boost, dopamine boost from yeah. eating those cookies. Don't
Quick
get me
boost.
Wrong.
Yes. Yeah.
But then fresh. Yes. But then unfortunately, those blueberries also are gonna have tons of antioxidants, mm-hmm. which will help reduce inflammation, which is another key reason why we encourage the increase in fiber in your diet. Because, like I said, it's going to dampen that erratic hormonal fluctuation, reduces your body's inflammation that's occurring, and can also improve with that weight management as well as your cardiovascular health. So blueberries, raspberries, there's like these little crackers. They're called Wassa crackers. I think at one point they were very popular, maybe early 90s, for more of like a diet food, but they're higher in fiber. You can really dress them up and do whatever you want with those, and they have a really nice crunch to them. Mm-hmm. And that's what I tend to find that patients are really looking for, is like, how can I get the crunchy, the savory, the salty, those types of things. And then of course we always gravitate towards sweet. So a go-to for me is like, I love the Wassa crackers. I'll do a little bit of whipped cream cheese. I know it's processed, but you could always substitute it with cottage cheese or mm-hmm. something. And then I'll put like an eighth to a fourth a cup of blueberries, how much ever you can kind of cram on top, and drizzle with honey or hot honey.
Yeah.
And that's like so good. Yes. Because you get the crunchy and the sweet and then the savory. I'll even sprinkle a little salt sometimes on there. So, but it's just a real quick whole foods option, mm-hmm. minus the whipped cream cheese. I know. But you, like I said, you can substitute it. Ricotta cheese is a really great option. cottage cheese, yogurt, you know, just making sure that there's minimal ingredients mm-hmm. in that option that you're choosing.
Yeah. But that sounds good to me. And
yeah,
hot honey is really good.
Yeah. I love a little kick. Mm-hmm. And then you add the sweet in there and the crunch of the berries. And yeah. So
and the crackers. That's and I'm a person go-to. That needs crunch too. Like when I am eating, I yes. have to have something that has a little crunch.
Like, yeah, if like
I'm
I need
even
a
having
pop.
Yogurt and berries, I need to have a little granola or something in there.
Yes.
That's just satisfying to me.
Yes. Lately it's been walnuts. I've been doing a lot of walnuts
right.
on top of mine. You got to be careful. They're packed with a lot. They're very calorically dense, so you just have to be careful with that. But walnuts, yeah, they're great because they're soft, but they still have a little bit of a crunch to mm-hmm. them. Yeah, and they just add that nice nutty, you know, flavor to it. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
So we're just saying get creative
yes.
with your food options.
Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. And cottage cheese is having a moment. For sure, right, with mm-hmm. the protein.
Yes.
But then also cabbage, and that's one we tend not to think so much about. But I was just listening. It was actually on the radio, and they were saying cabbage, this is the year of cabbage. 2026 is the year of cabbage. So I'm anxious to see what creative recipes mm-hmm. are coming.
Come out. Yes.
Because I gotta say, I don't have a whole lot of creativity when it comes to that. I have blended it before, red cabbage, and put it in a smoothie, and that's okay. And I guess I saute it sometimes, but outside of that, I don't have a whole lot in my, mm-hmm. you know. Also, like if you cook it, it tends to have a very fragrant odor.
Yes, it does.
Like when I was growing up, it was cabbage and pulled sausage. And my grandma would make it in the crock pot, and it was a very fragrant odor. Yeah. Mm. So
it is an easy one you could add to, you know, grilling. I mean, we're coming
sure,
up
yeah.
on grilling time
yes.
and like to do vegetables and say a foil pack and do some cabbage, cut up some cabbage and sweet potatoes,
yeah.
green beans, mushrooms, things like that.
Yeah.
And it's an easy one to sneak in there and it is
yeah.
really good for
yeah.
you. And it surprisingly, you know, offers a nice, you know, kind of a different flavor for
right.
veggies.
Yeah. Yes. Or a cabbage steak. I feel like I've seen that where they just slice it.
Oh, yeah.
And then, yeah, you can grill
wedge.
Just the, mm-hmm. yeah, the wedge. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. So, yeah, so thinking about those high fiber foods, and they just really also improve that insulin sensitivity and help control the weight gain that unfortunately is common during that menopause. And then thinking about, you know, this one's kind of a lot packed in here, but thinking about how can you manage the weight, stress, and mental well-being?
A big one.
Yes. So menopause is linked, you know, with emotional and physical changes that can indirectly influence our heart health. Unfortunately, that excessive abdominal fat raises the cardiovascular risk. And so that's really our biggest concern with that. Chronic stress, unfortunately, we know increases inflammation and just kind of heightens everything and kind of wears all of our systems down and can also increase your risk for depression. So we want to think, how can we be mindful about trying to manage or dampen our stress in general? And then practices such as stress reduction, really thinking about your social support system and trying to focus on good sleep will contribute to heart health. So for those of us that wear trackers or any type of fitness, things you might be wearing to monitor your sleep, really the key goal there is making sure that when you look at your sleep log is that your REM sleep is 45 minutes or greater. So that's really where you want to see. I know it generally, like my Ring will give me my quality score and all of that, but I will take that, but also how do I feel when I wake up? You know, if it's telling me mm-hmm. my sleep score is like 70 something, but I'm waking up and I feel good, then I know I might maybe feel not as great tomorrow when I wake up, because we kind of are like a day behind when it comes to what that sleep score really is going to mean. But I always go right down and look at where was my REM sleep at? Okay, I'm over an hour, or I got over 45 minutes, whatever it is. That's always where my focus is mm-hmm. lying ultimately. That and figuring out if it tells me the time I went to sleep and woke up, if that where that range is, kind of figuring out what will give you your optimal sleep is really, you know, the best thing. And if you don't have a sleep tracker, that's okay. Really, it's just kind of thinking about then, well, how did I feel when I woke up this morning versus how do I feel when I wake up the next morning, and kind of thinking about maybe how you set that day up or what did you do maybe mm-hmm. that could have impacted the quality of your sleep. And it's very difficult because in menopause, postmenopausal, we know that sleep disruption is a very real, very big symptom that tends to plague women, and sleep is so important also for that brain health as well. So we just, I'm sure there'll be so much more coming mm-hmm. for patients and for the general public in regards to that. And then thinking about, you know, our mental health, like I said, it's not a nicety. It's something that is extremely meaningful for all of our systems. Quitting smoking and limiting alcohol, you know, I'm always coming with ruining everybody's fun. But, and my concern is 2026, is there also seems to be a resurgence of smoking. There's a lot of propaganda coming out about the promotion of smoking. It's showing up now in reality TV shows again. Marlboro has now even moved to a zero nicotine cigarette that's now on the market. For what reason, I don't know. So I think there's going to be, unfortunately, a lot of glamorization of that. I think it's something as the general public, as well as providers, is something we need to be aware of. So as the estrogen level drops, alcohol tolerance is also going to lower, and alcohol can cause more intense hot flashes. Unfortunately, that insomnia, anxiety, and then worsening night sweats. So having more than 2 to 4 drinks per week can also increase your DHEAS levels, which has to do with your adrenal gland. But really the takeaway for that is that if your DHEAS levels are rising with, you know, due to an external substance, this can contribute to mood changes, which increases your irritability as well as can cause depression. So that's why we want to try and keep those levels at kind of their natural state. For females who are perimenopausal, menopausal or post, I have two alcohol choices for you. The first one is actually going to be 100% agave tequila. So, you know, a harder spirit essentially, but it's considered one of the best choices, especially during menopause. It doesn't cause spikes in your blood sugar, which is great. It tends to cause less inflammation, you know, because unfortunately alcohol does contribute to that, and it will reduce bloat. So there's also some evidence that was supporting that it has to be 100% agave tequila, can have some prebiotic, or can be considered as a prebiotic, and does support a healthy gut microbiota. And then for wine, you know, I know unfortunately there's been so much positivity around red wine in regards to health, but actually for women it's going to be white and it's going to be dry. So the dry white, such as a Prosecco if you're looking for something that is carbonated, or Sauvignon Blanc. So these tend to contain less sugar and will minimize those insulin spikes, and then they really just have without all that sugar, they tend to have a much lower caloric burden to them as well. So, and then being informed about hormone replacement therapy. So menopause, menopausal hormone therapy is also having a big moment here. Been a lot of new evidence coming out there in regards to that. But realistically, we need to remember that it's not recommended solely to prevent heart disease based on the major research, and should not be started just for that cardiovascular protection. It really needs to be a conversation and a discussion, and well supervised with your provider, and it needs to be specific to you.
Very good. Jade, thanks. Great, great information. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And for our listeners, and especially our ladies out there, make yourself a priority. And as Jade shared, start with your lipid panel. And once a year, get that done so that you can establish a baseline and take some of her key strategies into consideration. Do it for yourself and do it for your health. I do want to mention Jade is available for appointments at Vandy's Family Health Clinic here in Webster City. The phone number to call is 515-832-7800. That will do it for today's edition of Focus on Health, brought to you by Vandy's Medical Center, where our focus is you.